Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. Lee, you're going to enjoy this segment. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast co-founder and CRO. I'll bet you that R stands for revenue. We'll find out in a minute. With a company called Mad Kudu, please join me in welcoming to the show Mr. Francis Brero. How are you, man?
Hey, Stone. Very good. Happy to be here and excited to talk a bit about how we generate revenue and how I ended up being in charge of that.
Yeah. Well, before we get too far into it, can you talk about Mad Kudu? What are you doing for folks?
Yeah, absolutely. So Mad Kudu, we're a predictive analytics company, which is the non-cool way of saying we do AI. So we do AI to help sales and marketing teams at software companies build a customer journey that is more meaningful and that is frictionless by figuring out what is the right way to approach different leads and how to communicate with them in the most relevant manner.
Now, is there any significance to the word kudu? Like, what does that mean?
It's an excellent question. And it goes back to the fact that the company was founded by three engineers from France. And so when we started the company, we actually spent a lot of time brainstorming and looking for a name. And, you know, because we're data enthusiasts, we ended up writing a predictive algorithm that would take into account a list of adjectives and nouns that we ended up scraping from Wikipedia. And we bundled them together and we looked at what the cost for SEO, what the cost of the domain name, what the cost of app.domainname.com would be to figure out which would be the best name for the company. And Mad Kudu ended up becoming, you know, coming out number one.
So,
if you don't know, a kudu is a form of antelope, and we had no idea.
So you just trusted the technology to lead you in the right direction.
Exactly. And it was a close call because number two was Zigzab and number three was HipJ.
So you didn't ask any humans? You just went with where the data took you?
Yeah. I mean, building an AI company, we had to trust.
You had to, right? You almost had to. Now, so what's your vision? How are you seeing this kind of progressing? Is this your clients open to this, opening their mind to AI?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because the way we think about it is that, as I said, right, the vision is to fix the customer journey in B2B, which today is completely broken. Where I think AI can really help have meaningful conversations with thousands of customers in the same manner that we have one-to-one conversations today. A typical example is to look at most of the B2B companies that have demo request forms. When you go to that page to request a demo, they're going to ask you a ton of information, your name, your email address, your phone, your company name, probably the size of the company, how many people in your team. It's a very cumbersome process. And the funny thing about that is ultimately the only leads that they actually want to be in touch with and they want to let request a demo are going to be companies that are qualified. And those are typically the companies for which inputting all that information is actually meaningless, because if someone from IBM signs up for your demo form, you don't really care, that they input the size of the company. I mean, you know who IBM is and there's a lot of information about it. So kind of what has happened over time is that we've created a very cumbersome sales process to separate qualified leads from non-qualified leads. And it's actually detrimental to the qualified leads who are trying to reach out to you, which is absurd in a way. And so the idea is that if you start using AI, you can predictively and preemptively understand which are the qualified leads that are hitting your website. And therefore, you can build and adapt the sales process to them so that it's frictionless. So if someone from IBM comes up to your website, you actually don't ask for more information and you give them access to your calendar. And that's actually something that we do for ourselves. So if anyone ends up going to our demo form, when they input their email, it basically qualifies them on real time. And if they're qualified, they get access to my calendar. And we've run this for quite a few customers by now. And interestingly, we're consistently seeing, over between 50 and 70% increase in pipeline generated by simply making it easier for qualified leads to get access to the reps' calendars. So it's really interesting how the AI component is actually not necessarily that important, but it's really about how the AI enables to fix the customer journey.
Now, you mentioned that does it take the email address as the trigger, or can't you really tell from the IP address where they're coming from?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So the email address has a higher level of confidence than the IP. So typically, if we have the email address, we'll trigger from that. But we also do a lot of triggers based on the IP address. One of the tricky things with IP is that, the level of confidence is slightly lower. And when you're trying to book a demo with someone, it's better to have the emails that you can actually send the calendar invite to them. So one of the things that we've been doing with IPs is we work with a company actually called Clearbit that does IP to domain lookup. So when someone hits the website, Clearbit is going to give us information about who that company is. We run scoring on top of that. If the lead is qualified, we'll pop up. Usually we use Drift or Intercom chat. And with the Drift chat, we're able to tell them, hey, we see that you're coming from this company and you're actually qualified to talk to sales. Would you like to book a meeting? What's extremely interesting about this is we've removed the human component in the decision making of who should we talk to and who should see the chat and who should be allowed to book a demo. And for one of our customers, a company called Segment.com, which is making a lot of noise in the Bay Area, we actually ended up helping them close their biggest deal of the quarter by actually prompting a chat conversation with a lead in India. And the reason why India is interesting here is that typically reps don't want to particularly talk to tech companies from India. But because our scoring picked up that this was actually a very interesting one, we triggered the chat, that lead booked the meeting with a sales rep, and it ended up being the biggest deal of the quarter. So that was an amazing win in showing how by going from the IP to the scoring to triggering the chat, you're able to generate, biggest deals of the quarter, and there's very little human intervention until the point where you actually have a conversation with the other human.
Now, you're saying there's not a lot of human interaction until the actual conversation with the rep begins. But from the perspective of the person that's on the site, they are interacting with a chatbot or something. So in their mind, there is human interaction, right?
Not necessarily. And I think so that's where I like the way Segment does it on their website. They're very clear. They say our lead scoring algorithm tells us you're qualified to talk to sales. And I think this is actually a component that's going to be very interesting to see in, months and probably years to come is how we start interacting with these bots and how we actually market them. I think I don't generally like when people put bots and pretend they're human. I think it's fair to be clear about what you're doing and saying that, we looked up your IP, we know you're from this company, and therefore we'd like to offer you a chance to, get a fast track access to our reps and then initiate the conversation. But I definitely think that, there's a couple of companies right now that are on the edge of, pretending like it's an actual human being when in fact it's not. And I think that's very, very detrimental to the image of the company. And just to the customer journey itself, because you feel tricked.
So now, so transparency and authenticity is important in the best practices that you've learned since doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's probably when I do quite a lot of talking about AI because it's a big topic these days. And we with Matt Trudeau, we actually fortunate enough to be incubated by Salesforce for the past 5 months, where we were working on the launch of their new product called Einstein. So AI was really at the core of all of this. And I think one of the bigger components that came out of this for me is that very, very few people are talking about the implications of designing products that are based on AI. So everyone's talking about technology because it's super sexy. Everyone sees all it can do and it's glorious. But, you know, when you think about it from a UX standpoint, as a user, even the end user kind of leveraging the AI, there's a big trust component that I feel no one is really solving for today. And it goes all the way from, you know, self-driving cars and people not trusting the system to do the right thing to actually whenever you do predictive, it's how do you build this trust between the sales rep who's using your recommendations and getting a meeting booked from a lead in India? How does that person end up trusting the system that the decision it made was the right one? And that's where I think transparency is incredibly important to start building trust. And that's going to be, again, in the years to come, I think building and figuring out how we actually build this trust around AI is going to be a main topic. And it's going to be a huge challenge for companies.
But so far, the way that you feel trust is best built is by being transparent and letting them know that this is a bot. You're not talking to a person. We know who you are because, you know, in the bowels of the website, I can scrape your IP and I can tell you're this company and you meet this profile. You're not
Absolutely.
Hiding.
And I think that's, yeah.
You're doing it. Yeah, I mean, you're being straight up with them. You're not kind of tricking them into thinking they stumbled upon this and this is all a happy accident.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, yeah, that's exactly true. It's all about being transparent, both to the sales rep, but also to the customer. And I think that's where, you know, you also build trust and that's where you build your brand and making sure that, you know, in sales, I think it's always important to know and to think about how you're actually helping your prospect. Like a salesperson reaching out to a prospect should be doing it because they honestly and truly believe that if the prospect ends up using their software, it's actually going to make their life better. And so that's why I think it's perfectly fair to say, you know, for these reasons, we believe that you're a good fit for Segment because we know we're going to be able to impact your business in a positive way. And I think having that message very clear is actually better than trying to pretend that you have armies of people waiting behind
right.
chatbots.
At the ready to speak yep. to anybody 24/7 whenever they happen to pop on yeah. the site. Now, for you, that's great when they get to the site. What are you doing to get people to the site?
Yeah, that's another great question. So right now we do very little on advertising and helping our customers advertise. The main thing we do is looking at what are the different channels where when you look at the traffic that's being brought to your website, you can analyze that traffic to figure out which are the sources that are bringing the highest volume of high quality leads. So that's one way to kind of help companies optimize their marketing spend to bring more quality companies in. And then obviously outbound is a pretty big thing of having reps reach out to companies. And the way we help companies with that is we help them find what we call lookalikes. So if you've closed a given company, we want to look at what are similar companies from a value proposition standpoint that could benefit from your product. And, you know, we give access to those companies to our customers so that they can then start their outreach and start reaching out to these companies because they know they will have success with the platform.
But like in your company specifically, you have mm-hmm. featured customers. So I would imagine that the lookalikes for Shopify or e-commerce sites, you're looking for e-commerce sites. You have Pipedrive on there, so you're looking for CRM systems. So you have a team of people that are physically making calls and doing the traditional software as a service model of people calling. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's a good question. So on our side, we do very little outbound. Our customer acquisition has been close to 100% driven through referrals. So our strategy has been, we make our customers as successful as possible. And it's what's been happening is that every single one of our customers have been recommending us to, you know, their network, and that's been generating all of that. So essentially, we're mainly inbound driven as a company.
So talk about how that evolved with a company like Pipedrive. They're a CRM system for smaller companies, right?
Yeah. So for them, what's really interesting is that I'm trying to remember how we, I think we were introduced to them through Segment, because Segment was a customer, and it turned out that Pipedrive was also a customer of Segment, and they had a high volume of trials. And so because Segment knew that we ingested all the Segment data, made predictions on top of it to figure out who were the best users and who were the ones that should be using the software, kind of it made sense for them to engage with us. And so they made an introduction to their team, and we started working together. And what was really exciting is that as we worked with Pipedrive, new use cases came out, and now Pipedrive is actually talking to us, talking to a few of their bigger customers about Matkudu, and that's generated something like 10 customers, 10 of our high tier customers from that source.
So now for you, you're kind of organically building each customer on the back of the previous customer. And so that marketing strategy is a little different, I would imagine, than most of the people who are using your service because they're trying to, right? That's accurate. Now,
absolutely.
So when you're working with your customers and you're showing them about, you're talking about AI and marketing. At this stage, I would imagine, and then you'll probably agree, that these are the early adopters. This isn't fully kind of accepted into the whole marketing realm. This is still early, right?
At this point, yes. And I think that's where that's something we're working hard to change. I think one of the big problems, again, goes back to the fact that a lot of the vendors that are building AI are marketing it to early adopters. So even the way they're thinking about the product, the way they're promoting the product, it's very technically oriented. And I think, just when you think about the very simple example I gave you about making your demo form simpler, any company, any B2B company could use that. And so that's where when you go into more of the practicality, of the applications of AI, and you focus more on how it actually impacts the customer journey rather than what the technology behind it is, I think that's how we're going to be able to touch a larger market and essentially start, delivering AI for the 99% instead of just having a product that, can help the 1%.
Now, and then part of that is just the challenge of it's new. And like you said earlier, the trust isn't there yet. Like it's still new and everybody is kind of enamored just with the ability to do it. And they just haven't gotten past it. It's kind of elegantly available for everybody. And the way that you have to use it now in your mind, the best practices is do you have to explain that you're using it? So it's not just seamless yet. You have to say, hey, I learned this and I'm telling you this and we're interacting, but I'm not a human but I'm still doing it. So there's a lot of explaining still having to be done. And we're just right. Not past that yet.
No, absolutely. I think to your point, I think AI is actually becoming more and more of a commodity. And we've seen that, Salesforce, for example, just announced, at Dreamforce was all about their new Einstein kind of core component. So now they're making that predictive component a part of the CRM, which is one of the most widely used CRM. So that's showing how commoditized building AI is, because now it's available in a lot of the tools as an out of the box product. I think what really becomes interesting, as you mentioned, right, it's how do we design products around it? And that part hasn't been commoditized yet. And I feel a lot of people are slightly fearful about AI also because everyone thinks of Skynet.
Right.
Even though I don't believe we'll ever get to a Skynet model. I think we'll get to something that's more organic. Well, you'll have different species of AIs and different AIs that compete in specific areas that do different things. I mean, I think it's just going to generate, a complete new set of different species of AI. Getting people to trust AI in specific examples is definitely the challenge for adoption by the 99%.
And we're definitely getting there now. I mean, more and more people have an Amazon Alexa or Echo at their house. They're used to asking it a question about the weather. Like, it's not seen at first. It's kind of, oh, this is cool. It can tell me the weather. But now it's just part of the day that you just ask it that, and it answers you, and you don't think twice about it being a machine. You know it's a machine. It's not some person that's doing this. So
I agree. The one thing I will challenge with that is when you look at what's happening today with Google search and the Facebook ads during the presidential campaign in the U.S., people are actually starting to now question the AI that's behind their feeds in Facebook and behind the search results in Google. I think there's been a lot of awareness that's been created, especially with the presidential campaign, where now people are starting to wonder, why am I seeing this ad in my Facebook feed? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because it goes back to the trust, right? People don't understand why they're being shown this. And if they don't know why they're being shown that information, they don't really know if they can trust it. And I think people are now starting to think about it. Amazon so far has managed to not have to go down that route. But I think once people start looking into, why is an Amazon basic product recommended in my Amazon search? Is that really the best product, or is that because that's where Amazon is getting the highest margin? I think when people start asking those questions, we're going to go back into a scenario of trying to figure out, is the AI really helping me find the best product, or is it helping me maximize the market value of Amazon? And I think that's going to go back into, shedding some shadow around all the AI that's hidden behind those products.
But it's like you said earlier, trust is at the bottom of all of this. If you don't trust it, when remarketing started and you're like, wow, that's weird. I was just on Amazon and I was going to buy binoculars and now I'm somewhere else and there's an ad for binoculars, the one I was looking for at Amazon. Once you kind of intellectually understand, hey, this is following me around because I was over here, you got to say, well, overall, I trust Amazon or I don't, or I trust, company X or I don't. And that's at the heart of it. And I think you're exactly right with the transparency. At this stage, you got to be overly transparent almost, because you want to say that there's no hidden agenda here. I'm putting all my cards out on the table, and this is who I am, and this is how I know that you're you, or I think I know you're you, and I think there's a fit. But I think we're really early on this.
Yeah, and there's only very few companies that actually expose that data. I don't know if they still do it, but I remember back in the days where I was doing predictive analytics in the retail space, Axiom had a website, had a page on their website where you could go and input your information and you would see all the data they had about you in terms of what products you had looked for. And that essentially explained all the retargeting you were getting, because it would tell you, oh, you've showed interest in these products and these types of products, and therefore this is why we're remarketing. And I thought that was an amazing thing to do, because that was, probably 5 or 6 years ago when I was looking at this. And I think it was the first signs of people understanding, of a company understanding that people want to know what's behind the scenes. And I'm really looking forward to seeing more of this show up.
So now when you're having these initial conversations about predictive and AI and things like that, what are the questions that are being most asked?
That's an excellent question. I think there's one of them. I mean, maybe first off is I try to not go too much into the fact that we do predictive analytics when I'm talking to prospects, because that's more of a means to an end. And I really focus on how we're going to change the customer journey and how that's going to, enable them to connect faster and more easily with their best prospects. But ultimately, whenever we go into discussing the actual AI that's behind it, usually the question comes from people that have internal data scientists that have been trying to build models, and goes into why is your model better than my model? And the truth behind that is I don't pretend like our modeling algorithms are the best. I mean, we did not reinvent stochastic gradient descent. That's not what we want to do. But really the compelling part in B2B for sure is how do you generate meaningful features? How do you feed the algorithm with relevant information to help it predict? And one of the, I guess, like striking examples was one of the features we generate is we look at the zip code of a company, and the zip code itself, if you try to run a regression on top of zip code, you're never going to get any kind of valid results because it's very granular data. It's very sparse. You have very few companies in the same zip code. But so there's low density of information. But now if you go from zip code and from that, you extract the price of office space per square foot. And then from that, you rank it into deciles. So the top 10%, the next 10%. And now you group companies by the decile of pricing per square foot of office space. Now you actually end up having a very good sense of, is this company growing? Do they have budget? Are they funded? Versus a company that's going to be bootstrapped and doesn't have necessarily a lot of budget. So that's like one example of going from data that is very sparse, but that is readily available, and how you can actually extract information from it by manipulating the data. I think that's where the core value of a product like Mad Kudu lies, is in the fact that we have industry expertise in figuring out how to get value from the data that's readily available.
Well, it sounds like you're taking lead scoring and then just putting the Mad Kudu special sauce on it and just giving more effective results.
Yes, on the technicality of building a lead score, but then the main part of what we do is how we actually make that actionable and how we actually change again the customer journey based on those lead scores.
So now you mentioned that your growth is primarily organic through existing relationships that you have. If you were to kind of go out, if a stranger wanted to stumble upon you, what is the pain that they're having where that you're the best solution?
So the pain typically is when you have essentially you're not covering your financial plan, or you're struggling to grow at the rate you would like to, even though you have inbound leads. So that's where we come in, and the idea is to optimize the funnel. If you have people coming to your website, I mean, we're in the B2B space, right? Mm-hmm. People don't come to madkudu.com for a good time. This is not Facebook, right?
Right.
They come to madkudu.com
to solve a problem.
They have some form of interest. They're looking for something. And so therefore, essentially maximizing the conversion rate from someone visiting your website to, actually converting into a customer is where we have the highest impact. So it's really conversion optimization. And all of this relies on the fact that I said, like B2B sites are not here for fun. They're here for business.
Now, do you work best if the lifetime value of a customer is a certain dollar amount, or what's the kind of metrics that you're a good fit for?
So typically, as soon as there's a sales team, it just becomes tenfold more interesting. And so generally, you have a sales team when you start selling a product at over, let's say, $300 per month. One of the places where we have an even bigger impact is when you have a fairly high differentiation in pricing, where you have customers that are going to convert at $10, maybe $99 per month, and you're going to have customers who convert at $3,000 per month. Because that means that a small company, while it might not necessarily be a fit for your sales team, might be a great fit for your product. And so that's where there's more nuances that come into play in figuring out what is the right journey for that lead, because an IBM should be pushed to the self team, you do not want them to do a free trial experiment, because they're not going to get any value from a free trial. They're not going to be able to plug in systems. They need to go through security. However, if you have another company that's a smaller company, you don't want to push them to sales, but you still want to give them the ability to run a trial, because they're probably going to get value from the product and they might convert. And as they grow, you'll upsell them. And so having a frictionless journey for them is also incredibly helpful. So that kind of price differentiation is one of the things that, again, generates a ton of value for, makes us generate even more value for our customers.
So now, what could we be doing for you?
Great question again. I think, one thing is obviously spreading the word is always helpful. And I think one component is really pushing people to rethink about sales and marketing, and to start realizing that we've been operating in a manner that's been driven by software. So if you look at sales processes, they're mainly driven by, let's say, lead stages in Salesforce, right? Someone comes in, they're a marketing lead, and then they hit whatever activity. Now they become an MQL. We push them to an SDR, and then they talk to an SDR. The SDR says they're qualified. They go to an AE. So essentially, the customer journey is just defined based on the interfaces that have been created in these different products. I think educating people to think about the fact that there is another possibility, there is another way of doing customer acquisition that is more organic and based on who people are and what is the ideal journey for them. I think that's very helpful, because that's our vision. That's where we want to take the B2B space. And the more people start thinking about this, the more they're going to realize that it can have a huge impact on their business. And, that just creates more awareness as to around the problem we're trying to solve.
Now, is your initial conversations typically come from the marketing people or the sales people?
Typically, they come from the marketing people, because generally when you have a sales team, what we see is that the VP sales is more focused on the AE side of things. So he's more focused on closing opportunities, which means that the conversation is already going with the prospect, and it's about, really closing them and getting kind of all that sales process done. But the tricky part where there's the biggest, friction in the process, really coming from having someone hit the website to having a meaningful conversation with that lead.
Right. But that's right at the cusp between marketing and sales.
Yes. And right now what we see is that most of the time that's handled by marketing.
Mm-hmm. Even though you're kind of fast forwarding past some of the marketing stages by identifying the target as ready for sales ready.
Yep. And so that's where the marketing is our customer, but sales is our end user.
Right. So
that makes sense.
But when you're selling it into a company, you're having to go through marketing, even though the salesperson is the one that's probably benefiting the most.
Absolutely. And it creates a really interesting dynamic where what we see is that, in terms of the difference in how, these two teams look at leads, marketing is very analytical, and they think in terms of employee count, industry. So they're looking at leads with these sets of attributes that they use to determine if they should pass it on to sales. Sales has a much more, I don't know how to, so the other side of the brain, but they look at the lead and they almost immediately know if it's the right fit or not, but they don't necessarily look at specific traits. They're just, this is an enterprise customer, therefore it's a good fit, or this
right.
is
Well, it's more relationship driven and less transaction. So they're looking for
right.
kind of tentacles that can get them to where they have to go to make the sale. And it's humans right. are better at that and connecting dots
right.
that are disparate, and they can probably tell in a sentence or two if there's a fit or not. Whereas, the marketing person is, like you said, they're looking at buckets and checking boxes. Oh, they hit these five things, so they're ready to move to the next thing.
Right. And that's been something that was driven by software. I mean, this is a legacy of kind of the old lead scoring that was done in Eloqua, Marketo, HubSpot, Pardot, all these systems. I mean, you basically add points based on these attributes. And therefore, we've educated a generation of marketers to think in those terms instead of, you know, really thinking about, is this a good fit?
Right.
And so that's why I think, you know, the predictive analytics become interesting, because a lead doesn't have to fit into a set of boxes to be identified as qualified. And I think it's a lot more organic, and it can bridge partly the gap between sales and marketing by helping marketing have a tool that qualified leads, that is qualifying leads in a more salesy manner, if you will. That's the part that's really interesting for us, because we're taking the feedback from the end users as the salespeople, building trust with them to make sure they trust the algorithm, and using that to make the marketers think differently about who they're reaching out to and who they're trying to convert.
Good stuff. Well, it must be exciting time for you. And it seems like the sky's the limit when it comes to opportunity with this, because, you know, I think we're so early on now that people are going to just lean more and more on the technology side, like you're talking about in this AI and the predictive, so that it's going to be more, it'll be everywhere sooner than we think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as it starts driving adoption and people are seeing how, you know, quickly and incredibly it can change the customer journey, I think that's going to help a lot of companies win. Because people want to move away from this rigid system and move into something more organic. And I think, yeah, AI carries that possibility. So really excited about the years to come.
All right. So if somebody wanted to learn more and have a meaningful conversation, I know on the website, there's a lot of resources. There's a simulator. There's a lot of case studies and things like that. But if they wanted to talk to you directly, what's the best way to get a hold of you? Is it through LinkedIn, through your email?
Through email at so it's francis@mattfuju.com. And then going to our demo page, that's mattfuju.com/contact. That's a great way to get access to my calendar directly if you're a qualified lead.
If you make the cut, right? Because then the website will take care of it from there.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Co-founder, Chief Revenue Officer with Mad Kudu, Mr. Francis Brero. It's been a real delight having you on the show this afternoon, man.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you so much for having me.
And that's Mad Kudu, MadKudu.com.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest today, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.